I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. My name is Marcus Speller.
My name is Jim Campbell.
My name is Luke Aaron Moore.
And I'm intimidated by the dirty pigeons.
Of course, they love a bit of him, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Football Ramble in your ears once again. How is everybody? Jim, did you have a lovely Easter weekend?
I suppose so. Yeah, I did what I normally do.
All right, let's move on from you. Anybody else?
I don't have any concrete proof that it was actually Easter weekend.
No.
Yeah. Because everything is the same. The only thing different that's happened to me is that my garden umbrella blew into next door's garden
this morning.
I've got it back. I had to climb over a couple of walls and shimmy through some...
That's out of order, that is. You're not allowed to do that.
Got to stay local.
I know, but I kept my distance at all time.
Okay. Luke, would you say we need a break from the new routine?
I mean, no, I'm happy to fulfil my moral and civic responsibility to get through this situation. I'm just saying,
it's not what you were saying before.
Everything feels a bit like the same. Shut up. I knew you were going to say that. Everything feels the same.
Not at the cost of an umbrella. No.
Are you allowed to legally traverse London with a massive picnic umbrella? Are you allowed to float around? Is that allowed?
Mary Poppins.
Yeah,
Mary Poppins style. Is that an effective and legal form of transport in these troubled times?
The other thing that normally typifies Easter for me is that I eat a load more food. Well, I've got news for you. I've been eating a load more food for the last 3 weeks. So there's no discernible way of telling what time of year it is what I'm trying to say.
It's just sort of plateaued.
Because KFC and McDonald's are closed, I've lost 4 to 5 pounds now.
Well done.
All right.
Peter, is your Chinese restaurant that you go to on a Sunday night still open?
No, there's only one, and it's on the corner of Chinatown. Very little foot traffic. They really are trying their best, but literally no one's getting involved.
Oh, that's a shame.
No.
All right.
Around Soho, it's pretty quiet. There's one, I think I mentioned last week, there's one bubble tea shop open, and the rest is just Deliveroo drivers tootling around.
Yeah, I might steal a Deliveroo bike so I can just have a little drive around and see what it's like in this sort of 28 days later style apocalyptic scene. I can't imagine central London being quiet.
Oh, at the weekend, I mean, it's just full of people who live on the outskirts of London tootling around on the Boris bikes, RIP. And they're just kind of like absolutely flouting the rules. So it was absolutely full of people just tootling around over the weekend.
Can I just cut in and say that, by the way, if the apocalypse means that no more films like Soccer Dog European Cup are going to get made, bring it on.
Mm.
You could easily make that in artificial intelligence. An AI bot.
yeah. It felt a little bit like it was written by that.
Yeah.
All right. You're jumping way ahead, gentlemen. We're jumping way ahead. We have to talk about the president of the Gabon Football Association before we talk about any of that.
Of course we do.
Marcus, how happy would he be knowing that he's top of the running order? What strange times we live in.
Yeah. He'd be absolutely delighted. I mean, normally, yes, the president of Gabon, the football... I shouldn't say the president of Gabon. It's the Gabon Football Association president, I should probably word it, just in case something happens and people don't quite hear that correctly. But yes, he's the head of football in Gabon. Now, normally, he would have had to have done something quite severe to get to the top of the running order. But of course, in these times, merely just giving his opinion on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is enough. And he said that Aubameyang should move to a more ambitious club if he wants to win trophies. I thought to myself,
why is everyone so determined to sell Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang from under my feet?
Jim. Arsenal are not very ambitious. They've not even bothered to organise a football match in the last 4 weeks. So, look.
Yeah, well, the Gabonese Football Association president said, football is a collective sport. Right now he's at Arsenal and he's won nothing there. So it's a collective failure. Of course, he had an individual success with that golden boot, didn't he?
He did. It's a brutal assessment, though, isn't it? An absolute filleting of the situation.
By the way, where's he going to go? I mean, no. This guy does realise that no one else is playing either.
Yeah.
Right. I think what's happened is he's. By the way, why is the Gabonese fucking getting involved anyway? I mean, there's absolutely no reason. Whatever happens, he's still going to be eligible for Gabon, so don't worry about it. It's not as though, it's really competitive up front for Gabon. So if it doesn't start winning things, he's not going to get in the team.
Does he think if Aubameyang wins something, that Gabon wins something?
Yeah, probably. Actually, it probably is like that, yeah.
I'm trying to think, who's the head of the FA? Is it... I forget now who we've had. But you imagine the head of the FA in England wading in on the Harry Kane situation.
In England, it's Martin Glenn, isn't it?
Martin Glenn, that's right. Yes, of course. Imagine Martin Glenn going, I think Harry Kane needs to move to win more trophies. You're like, all right, Martin. Just concentrate on England winning trophies.
Personally, I'd be all for that.
Yeah. He'd be at the top of the running list.
Literally, the only other Gabonese footballer I can think of is Daniel Kusan. Remember him?
Yeah.
No, not really.
He played for Haaland Rangers and he's the only other Gabonese. I mean, the thing, I guess what we're trying to say is, and this is, I apologise if I grossly misread the situation about Gabonese football, but I think that Martin Glenn's probably got loads of stuff happening. So he hasn't got time to talk about this kind of stuff. Although, having said that, there has been precedent in the past for suit and ties in the FA piping up about stuff I don't need to pipe up about. So it probably is something that goes across all administrators of football because they can't help sticking their beak in, can they? No.
Yeah, that is very true. Get your beak out. Arsenal apparently have said to their players that if they qualify for the Champions League when the season resumes, then they won't have to take a wage cut. Well, that's a very interesting angle to approach it from.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? I mean, is that based on Man City's European ban being upheld and then the previous standings from last season being used to decide who qualifies for the Champions League? Because there's a lot of qualifiers in there, isn't there?
There certainly is, yeah.
So to speak.
One of the things that came out of something that David Ornstein was saying a while ago now, before this sort of stuff happened, was that Arsenal, I think he said that Arsenal players all voted as a group to not take bonuses for Europa League. Like if the team, right. Because they all said that, you know, that's not good enough for Arsenal. We need to be in the Champions League, so we're not going to take any bonuses for Europa League football. And so I wonder if this is kind of linked to that. But the problem is, as we say every week at the moment, no one knows what's happening. So it's all pretty academic, really. I mean, if they qualify for the Champions League when the season resumes, well, that's if the season resumes. We don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
So it's all pretty up in the air, really.
Yeah, it's a strange old situation. Well, according to their North London rivals, according to people who talk bollocks, Daniel Levy would sell Harry Kane for 200 million. Although sources have said to Sky Sports News that's not true. But apparently, I don't know if anybody's aware, Spurs have a lot of debt due to recent major building works. And Levy is angry with... Yeah, I know. Who would have... It went under my radar.
Have you seen they've got a huge conservatory on the stadium? They've just put it on. I don't know why they did it.
Got some guys to do their guttering, did they? Right, I get it.
Yeah. They've had extensive piping done, so they've got the most efficient toilets in the land. But Levy is also angry with Harry Kane saying that the season should be null and void if they can't resume by June. So it's all happening in North London.
This all looks very just made up, doesn't it? Like I suppose it's very easy to say that Daniel Levy's angry with Kane saying the season should be null and void, but you've just got, unless he's told you that directly, which is very unlikely to do, you've just got to pluck that out of his head and hope it's true, haven't you? So I think this is the definition of a slow news year.
Yeah. Could you not just take that 200 million and could you invest it in like a really average striker and turn him into someone better than Harry Kane? It's just the money's getting so silly now. Yeah, using technology and like stem cells and stuff. Could you not invest 200 million into a very bang average footballer and turn him into a footballer better than Harry Kane?
Need to be a footballer?
Yes, exactly. Me. Turn me into a $200 million man.
Pete, one of the key issues, though, around that otherwise absolutely flawless idea is that it needs to be garnering returns like pretty much straight away. There's no point grabbing like an 18-year-old guy who looks like a bit of an athlete and saying, right, using modern technology and £200 million investment, we are going to turn you into a great football player by the time you're 28. Not good enough, is it?
I think you've got to back yourself. I think if you've got £200 million to spend... I don't even think you necessarily pick an athletic-looking young guy. You just do a raffle. Just do like a national raffle, and whoever wins it, that's the guy. And then you just, you know, if the boffins in your lab aren't getting the results, then you get better boffins or you work them harder. Yeah.
Or could you just do, for 200 million quid, could you just essentially transplant the brain of a retired but brilliant footballer into a younger host?
Yes, that'd be brilliant.
You're sort of assuming here, chaps, you're sort of assuming that Elon Musk has taken over a football club.
He might have done.
He probably will do eventually.
Well, this is the kind of thing he would come out with.
He'll do something dreadful and he'll have to sports wash his entire operation. I mean, he's already accused certain people in the world of certain things that he inexplicably got away
with. While smoking a joint on Joe Rogan.
Yeah. And there's also a car in orbit now, isn't there? Just in orbit around the Earth. There's a car just up there.
Space junk. Absolute space junk.
On this Harry Kane thing, a couple of things spring to mind. One is that when this type of story, which is, you know, on the face of it, absolutely gigantic, the England captain moving to one of the biggest clubs in the world for a world record fee, I personally think a well-known journalist or a journalist worth the name might have got a sniff of that. And so my first check is to have a look around, and none of them have. Number two, I also am put in mind of a week or two ago when we talked about how, according to actually reputable sources, Man United don't like doing business with Spurs because they keep getting their pants pulled down.
Yeah.
Next, 200 million quid. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. That figure is obscene, isn't it? And actually, obviously, that would break the world transfer record, wouldn't it? Because I think it was Neymar 198 million. It was 222 million euros.
If it's done on euros, then in this one with Kane, as things stand, I think would be 227 million euros. So it would beat it, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's going to happen.
Probably Man United could afford it. I forget where I was reading this, but obviously, Ed Woodward, for all of his faults, he's put together a hell of a lot of commercial partnerships. So Man United they're not going to struggle for money. So maybe they could afford it. But also, would Kane want to go there with no guarantee of Champions League football? We spoke about that briefly before, didn't we? But the transfer fee is distasteful, isn't it? I mean, in the in all the furore about Man City, which led to the transfer ban, I read something saying that some leaked internal emails from PSG, which I think came from the Football League's guy, had said that they deliberately paid as much as they did for Neymar, not because they necessarily needed to, but to inflate the market so that basically only them and a few others could afford to buy the top players. And we're seeing with the situation that Barcelona have now with Antoine Griezmann and trying to move him on to get Neymar and how complicated that is, that it sort of worked. And it's just, I hate seeing anyone else play that game, even though this is a completely hypothetical situation that's been made up for clicks.
Well, Jim, the only part of it, I'm not saying it won't happen or it isn't possible or whatever. I don't know. I have no insight into that. But the only thing I've heard reputably is that some people at Spurs were upset with Kane for going what they think is being off message on what should happen with the season going forward. And obviously him being the captain, or I think he's one of the captains at the club anyway. I know Lloris is a captain as well. But him being a senior pro there and a figurehead, he gave some quotes which were perceived to be in quotes off message, which they were unhappy about. So whether someone has spun that into this now, it's entirely possible. But all I'm saying is, I don't mean to be a snob or to be rude, I don't know the guy, but someone I've never heard of popping that up on Mail Online smacks to me of trying to get people to read the website rather than something that's actually happened, because there's so many good journalists in this industry, and one of them would have got a sniff. That the contacts that they've got would be so good that you'd think it would come from them.
There's a sense of them perhaps trying to will it into existence as well to then get a scoop.
Yeah, because football's not happening at the moment and people are trying to generate all sorts of activity. And you wouldn't find us doing that by, for example, opening up a section, doing a kind of Please the Masses film club, for example.
Exactly.
No, certainly not. Yeah. Certainly not. And I'm sure in other news that Newcastle United have got takeover talk still ongoing. So in the spirit of that, let's move on. Now, something that is going to happen are some rule changes or rule tweaks, depending on how you look at it, for the Premier League next season.
Give your rulies a tweak.
Indeed. Well, one of them is that it involves VAR. So as if we haven't had enough of VAR, referees will be expected to use pitch-side monitors a lot more when VAR is involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. This change is a massive dig at the Premier League, and that's why I think it's quite funny.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
What they've done is they've removed the word it off. So I think it used to say the pitch side monitor will often need to be used or whatever, and they've removed that word because the Premier League essentially is the only major league not falling into line, and they've been annoyed about it, and they won't do it. So then they've said, no, you've got to do it. Which I think is a very, very good thing. I don't particularly like VAR anyway, as none of you guys do as well. But if we are going to have it, then I suppose we want to have it in the best way possible. And for me, this is an improvement.
Yeah. Well, also, people, I think, were hopeful that the communication between the referee and those at Stockley Park was going to be broadcast in some way, or we'd be privy to those conversations. But that's not going to happen. But they do understand that things need to improve with regards to the understanding of the referee's decision and the review process. So I'm not quite sure, I don't know, if someone sort of draws a picture or someone commentates on the conversation that's happening. Go, yeah, they're talking now. So
it could be like one of those little courtroom drawings. We have like a little chalk sketch of what's happening in Stockley Park.
Maybe.
Stockley Park just sounds so lonely at this moment. They're not doing anything. It sounds like that
no one's there.
Wind of Change song. down at Starkly Park. Just this absolute barren, quiet, post-apocalyptic.
Or the Sam Rockwell movie Moon.
Yeah, Starkly Park, like a man just wandering around a space station. Got nothing to do.
If that's the case, then why are they not getting more things right?
Yeah.
There's nothing else to do.
They've got, you know, they've got a lot of time to work on it. But I think that's a really nice idea. I mean, move the responsibility of the actual football match to the bloody bloke who's wearing the referee's kit. Check it out on the video clip. There's the new rule on penalties, isn't there, Marcus?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, this is... So are you talking about handballs or goalkeepers?
Handballs and then goalkeepers. Let's start with one, then move on to the next.
One often leads to the other with handballs and goalkeepers.
Just leading the horse where he needs to go.
Appreciate that.
You can lead a horse to water.
Yes.
And he will ask which part of the water he needs to drink.
So, Peter, talk us through the new handball suggestion.
Love that. Get it back, Donny.
Most penalty takers will need to have hands as well as the goalkeepers. There was a stipulation back in the 70s that you could take a penalty without actually having a hand. A couple of footballers took advantage of that rule. But for balancing reasons and for just all-round fairness, they've decided that the penalty taker should need hands.
Okay,
I think it's really important to get that down in the laws, actually, to make sure there's no kind of grey area with that. Do you want me to answer it, Marcus?
Please do, Luke, please.
Yeah. The handball law has changed, so now there's what they call a T-shirt law or T-shirt rule, which that's what has been learned as colloquially, where the top of the shoulder, essentially, if you think about it in your mind, if it were to hit the short sleeve T-shirt bit, then it wouldn't be handball. So the Tyrone Mings thing would be slightly different under the new laws. No one appears to have worked out how that's going to help if players are wearing long sleeve shirts, but I guess that's for next update. I don't know. I mean, I just didn't bother thinking about that. So the handball laws are slightly changed. There's a really good thread on Twitter, for those of you who are on Twitter, by Dale Johnson of ESPN, who's very good to follow for laws of the game and VAR stuff anyway, and he explains it more clearly. But essentially it means for the first time it's been defined what part of the arm is handball and what part isn't, basically.
I was talking about the fact that the time in between the handball taking place and then a goal being scored being the situation, and that time being shortened.
That's also changed, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, on top of that, there's also the encroachment rules are changing, aren't they? Which is that if a player is leaning into the box but their feet are on the line or behind the line, they're not considered to be encroaching. And also, a penalty will only be retaken if a goalkeeper comes off his line and saves it. Is that right? I think these are all good changes, actually.
Yeah.
These are all good little tweaks that we've wanted.
Should really have been done in the summer, in my opinion.
Yeah. Nothing about offsides, though.
You guys, this is a really interesting part of it, right? So as far as I'm aware, so what tends to happen is that new laws or adjustments to existing laws are implemented usually from June 1st, right? Because obviously everyone's season's finished by then. Now, clearly, because we're in a different situation now, that's not going to be the case. So rather than just say, okay, we're going to implement these laws for when the new season starts, what IFAB have actually said is you can decide whether you want to implement the new laws yourself for the remainder of the season post June the 1st, or if you don't want to. So essentially, there's going to be... Well, that's the thing. I don't know if it's going to be changed, but I read up on this on Friday, and the last I heard, that individual associations and leagues were going to be able to choose themselves.
Right.
Ooh. Yeah, I think realistically, you would still want those changes, because let's look at Villa is the example where Tyrone Mings was judged to have handled in a rule that now would be different. You might look at that and figure that they could go, well, hang on, we were penalised for that, so how's it fair if for the rest of the season that's not an issue? But then what if it happens to them again? Do you know what I mean? It's you would think the clubs would want the better rules in place. That's what I think, anyway.
There's also a quite a nice one that I think me and Luke slightly disagreed on this season about the goalkeeper coming off his line. It'll only be retaken during a penalty shootout or a penalty situation if the keeper manages to save the penalty. I don't think Luke was that arsed about keepers coming off his line, but it really annoys me.
Oh, yeah, it really does, doesn't it?
It didn't annoy you, Peter, when Tim Krul was playing for Newcastle, did it?
Well, because he's an excellent penalty server. That's why. Doesn't even need the rule.
Yeah, but he comes off his line.
He does come off his line, yeah. What's your problem?
Okay, so One cruel for one.
Well, there we are. Right, are we ready to move on from this rule chat, gentlemen?
Mm. I've got a little Tim Krul thing that I don't think we covered on the show. Did you see that for Mother's Day, Tim Krul bought his, I think I'll get this right, Tim Krul bought his wife, i.e. his kid's mum, a water bottle with all the names and the ways that the players dived as a present that he got made up from some kind of third-party internet gift provider in celebration of the penalties he saved against Spurs in the Cup.
What? Is that true?
So, and that was a present for who, sorry?
Tim Krul posted on Instagram around Mother's Day a picture of a water bottle that either he bought for his wife or his wife bought for him. But it was centered around Mother's Day with all the... Because you know he had that water bottle with the stickers on it?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember this story about when he was... Yeah, yeah. And so he had it, I guess, kind of immortalized in a gift that was circulated around his family from some internet gift provider. I don't know why. I'm just saying it happened and it was on Instagram and I remember seeing it at the time and I just remembered.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that seems an odd fit for Mother's Day, doesn't it?
Yeah, weird.
I'm having it, I'm loving it. It was probably some enterprising engraving company that probably sent it over and he probably posted it and we all get a bit confused about it. But if it was him who decided that his wife deserved that, he might not have a wife for very much longer.
Yeah, that is a bowling ball with Homer engraved onto it, isn't it?
Maybe right on the bottle, don't send crappy Mother's Day gifts next time.
Right, gentlemen, it's all happening in Scotland. It's all going off.
I can't wait for this.
Oh, yes. Wow, cool.
They had a vote on whether to finish the three leagues below the top flight, the Scottish Championship, League One, League Two. The current league standings would count and therefore be decisive in the league's outcomes. So whatever if they vote on that, then as we spoke about before, people are promoted, people are relegated now. There's no kind of, we'll try and play it a little bit later. So the Scottish Premiership, League One and League Two all voted in favour. And I think the main reason for this seems to be that clubs are worried that they might not get the prize money and all that kind of stuff. So they want to finish it now to make sure that that they get some much-needed money. That seems to be the motivating factor. Right. However, Dundee didn't submit their vote. Dundee are a Championship side. And the outcome of the whole thing rests on their vote. You need 75%, I think, or more of the votes for this all to pass. So Dundee, some people are saying, from Dundee, are saying, no, we did get it in the deadline, which was 5 p.m. Friday. And other people are saying, well, you actually had 28 days to get the vote in, which seems odd, because they want to make a decision fairly soon. Now, UEFA have asked member associations not to abandon leagues before 23rd of April. So the whole thing, quite predictably, is all over the place. Who would have thought that Scottish football would be put into chaos with a simple vote?
Yeah.
Rangers are very unhappy about the whole thing. Very unhappy indeed. However, there is a suggestion that the top flight in Scotland could increase to 14 teams as of next season, which might satisfy teams and would save teams from relegation, such as Hearts.
Can I jump in with a cheap joke and say that it's the first time Dundee have been relevant in Scottish football since the 60s?
That's very nasty.
It appears so, yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on with this situation, so I do recommend for anybody trying to keep track of it that you just try and get Lust for Life in your head to soundtrack the whole thing. And it just gives it a bit of a jaunty rhythm.
Yeah. Is that your analysis on that?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I've got.
Do you want my analysis on it, Marcus?
Yep.
Didn't D.
What?
That's all I got.
What?
Didn't D. They should have done D'd it, but they didn't D it.
What you mean is done don't would have been better.
Didn't D it.
Yeah. What? I mean, no, Pete, no, the very idea that we would join you for that joke. I mean, how are we getting on board that?
I didn't even
hear what you said.
I thought there'd be a straggler or two, that's all. You misheard what I said. Didn't they? Dundee. Should have Dundee'd it. They didn't do it.
Didn't they do it?
Yeah, Lust for Life doesn't sound so bad now, does it, Marcus?
Yeah, that's true. I wish you'd have just chosen a track that meant something to Scottish people, Peter. But there we are. We can always hope for next time, because I'm sure the situation will go on and on and on until it comes down to a some sort of fist fight. All right, then. Let's move on from Scottish football. The sad news, Peter Bonetti died.
Very sad. That caught my attention across the weekend. Very sad. Died age 78. He'd been ill for quite a long time. unfortunately. But I thought it's very much worth a mention because he's, you know, such clearly played the game a long time before. Well, a lot of our listeners, and including ourselves, probably remember football. But he was a legend, particularly at Chelsea, where he was there for 15 years and went back again for a few years after a little departure. So in total, he was there for almost 20 years. And amazing keeper, played for England as well, of course. And one of the things I really liked about his career is that when he retired, he moved to the Isle of Mull, where he ran a guest house and became a postman. Just fancied a bit of quiet life. That's all he wanted. So amazing to see. Won the FA Cup with Chelsea in 1970 and won the Cup Winners' Cup as well. Brilliant keeper, probably a bit unfairly maligned for that famous incident with England. And he was also had the record for the most appearances for a single club by a goalkeeper until Alan Knight at Portsmouth beat it. But let's face it, Alan Knight wasn't playing in the top flight for any of that. Maybe for more than one or two seasons of that, I don't think. So anyway, Peter Benetti, rest in peace. Condolences to his family and friends. Legendary keeper of the English game.
Absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have a quick break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Luke, what's going on in our Patreon?
Yes, indeed, Marcus. Highlight for this week's Patreon will be two special episodes of Ramble On, our Patreon-exclusive show. This week, split into teams, we have decided on our best Premier League 11 from the 21st century with Marcus, Jim and Andy on the manager, defence and goalkeeper, and Pete, Jules and I on the midfield and the forwards. These two episodes and many, many other benefits, including Discord access, special Ramble Meets apps, videos from Marcus, newsletters and much more, are only available to patrons. So if you're in the market for extra stuff to watch, read and listen to, head to patreon.com/footballrambledaily and sign up. That's patreon.com/footballrambledaily.
Yeah, if you want to hear me argue the case for Yohan Cabaye, Habib Bey to be in the team of the millennium, you can listen to that over at patreon.com/footballrambledaily.
No, I might just wave those through.
Yeah, wave them through. It's fine. Yeah, it's more work than it needs to be to argue.
And now it's time for emails with PED.
You email show at footballrambledaily.com, and now
It is time for emails with Petey D. My name is Petey D, so I shall be administering the emails. Hello to Ross Schroff. I'm sure people have found it difficult to pronounce your name before, Ross Schroff, and I'm doing it just as badly. So hello, Ross. David Beckham does no speak Spanish well. Ramble Force, hola. In reference to your discussion on whether or not Bex can speak Spanish, I've been learning Spanish on and off for the last couple of years, including a month living in Sevilla when I was going to a Spanish school every day. Oh, Ross Schroff. In the first week of the class, the Sevillano professor showed us a video of David Beckham's final press conference before he left Real Madrid. This was an example of how, even if you are immersed in the country and the culture and you have the best tutors in the world at your disposal, you still can't learn the language if you don't have determination and self-motivation. Basically, even when Beckham had been in the country for years, he was still bad enough that even A1 level Spanish learners could tell he was terrible. Keep up the good work, as always. And then he puts a lot of Spanish, which I can't read. Yeah, Ross, I mean, I said that he could speak Spanish. I didn't say he was very good at it. All right? Okay? All right, Ross? Yeah? Yeah?
That's implied, though, isn't it?
It is. I suggested that, actually, I don't think he spoke much Spanish. Spanish? Blimey, it's happening to me. Ross, get away.
Ross Schroff.
I'm absolutely delighted to know that when I first heard a man called Ross Schroff, he turned out to be exactly the kind of human being I thought he'd be.
Well, hello to Jake Burrows. Very much enjoying this one. Hi, I know you're right on emails, so I figured I'd just let you know that during a Zoom chat, I discovered my partner's surname was Carruthers. That got me thinking about fake Carruthers, but I've just realised I'm thinking of the wrong show. Sorry, I've been drinking 4 days. Sorry.
Yeah, but you'll get read out on here, mate. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but you'll still get read out on here. All right? No love lost between the Guardian
The only possible parameter for getting an email read out on this show is timing it so it's the most recent one when Pete logs into the email. That's all you've got to do. There's nothing about the subject. Just it's got to be sat proud of place at the top of the inbox when Pete logs in. Is that fair, Pete?
I just enjoyed the word proud of place. Stephen Dunn. Hey, guys. Thank you. Thank you for helping keep me company during the isolation. You were talking about being surprised to hear Ronaldo speaking English. As an Irish guy living in the Netherlands, I had a similar experience when I found interviews by Ronaldo and Luis Suarez in Dutch. They both picked up the language very well, considering neither played there for very long. And he's appended a couple of YouTube clips. And yeah, they appear to my ears to be speaking a little bit of Dutch. So there we go.
It's very nice.
Yeah, so I do enjoy footballers speak. I enjoy Kevin Keegan speaking German. I enjoy Arsene Wenger's goodbye speech in Japanese is very read off the paper rubbish.
Roy Hodgson speaking Norwegian.
Oh, he speaks everything, doesn't he? In his kind of moi kind of vernacular. Do you want to hear from Max Coventry, which is this sounds like the worst proposition in the world. Do you want Max Coventry?
Sounds like a failed porn star.
Yeah, or like a really, really budget superhero.
Or town mascot. big shop tips. Hi, all. It's Max from London here. He's not even from Coventry. Stop mugging us off, Max Coventry. Given the current circumstances, surely it's the time for return of big shop tips.
Yeah, I can give a few.
Yeah, all right.
No, go on, Pete. Sorry, I didn't know you were going to give one. Go on.
Well, I shall take charge of this.
Max Coventry is taking charge of this. My tip is the Polish supermarket has most of what you need. Cheers, Max. It? Now you may begin, Luke, your big shop tips.
It's only if Jim wants me to.
Yeah, go on, dive in.
I haven't actually got any. Keep your distance and just only purchase the things you need.
Yeah. I would say that they run with a skeleton staff at the moment. Security are invariably concentrating on not being near anyone. So shoplifting has never been easier.
Peter.
That is painfully irresponsible, even for you, Donaldson.
What's your problem?
Can I also say, have we got another email from, has Billy Watford been in touch? Or Danny Doncaster,
Stephen Ireland.
There's one about. There's one from Henrik Saltstein, but that's about Soccer Dog. But we'll get onto that one a bit later on.
Yeah, because it's almost certainly made up because that is not a real name.
All right, then. If you want to get in touch with the show, it's shortfootballrambledaily.com.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, if that wasn't a a big enough punch in the face. We move on to Pete's Film Club.
Pete's Film Club.
It's time for Pete's Film Club. This week's film was Soccer Dog 2 European Cup. You'd think they'd go for European Pup, but they didn't. It goes as follows. In a laboratory in Scotland, a mad scientist, Dr. Oddlike, which is Frank Simmons, conducts experiments on a spunky canine, Kimball, who proves to be unusually adept at soccer. When Kimball escapes, he comes across Zach, a lonely American kid who has come to Scotland to find Brian, Nick Moran from Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, the father he has never known. The remarkable dog helps to reunite father and son, but also tries to assist a struggling soccer team make it to the finals.
Started in the lab and took it to the net.
You want to play?
With only one goal in mind. To bring a father and son together.
It's over, Zach.
And maybe play a little ball. Now.
You have got to play.
He's fetching it like Beckham.
I've got more than that.
I've got me, the best football team.
Get ready for the family movie that proves every dog has his day.
Who wants to put the first boot in?
I mean, can I just say, I fucking hated this film.
It is for kids, but it's also just an hour and 20 minutes, so wind it in, Lukey.
I think that... I thought the film was very poor. Very good, Marcus.
That is about the level of humour in it as well, isn't it?
I couldn't wait for it to finish.
You were so angry about this, Marcus. I've rarely seen you this upset and distressed by something. See, I actually felt there were times in it where it was actually so bad it was funny, because it's supposed to be set in Scotland, isn't it? It's clearly set in probably Florida, maybe somewhere like that, or it was certainly filmed in a place where it is blue, cloudless skies in every shot. It's clearly America.
Yeah. It's filmed in the Hollywood Hills. It's definitely filmed in the Hollywood Hills. There's three locations: football field, pub. And there, I think
cabin.
At one point, is an old cabin. There's an old shack, isn't there? Parts of the... Oh, yes, and a laboratory as well, which could have been just a cupboard, effectively. But it's the town of Crocker Gym, where they play soccer. What are we going to call a town, guys? Let's call it Crocker, because it rhymes with soccer.
Some of the production steals in it were so poor that, like, there was at one point, or well, maybe on more than one occasion, where they just didn't bother changing the number plates on the cars.
Yeah,
so like,
oh, that was
it's
amazing.
Supposed to be Scotland, but none of the cars have like UK number plates on them.
Yeah, but some of them did, but some of them didn't. Yeah, exactly, Marcus. You were absolutely right about that. That's one of the things I found really enjoyable. Like, all of the kids are Americans who are for some reason being made to do Scottish accents. And there's a point where this you know, bully style kid kicks a ball away, and one of the kids says to him, "What about my ball?" And he goes, "Gee, I don't know. What about it?" It's like, "G?" Scottish kids don't say "G." It's this weird sort of amalgamation of what's going on. And I honestly think one of the kids' accents was so bad that they almost made it out like the character had learning difficulties a bit, but they didn't quite didn't quite settle on it to make it maybe easier for the kid to do the accent. It was very that was not good in a lot of ways. Mm. And it's the humour was almost like, kind of a bit like the Beano. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It was very, very silly in a very childish way.
I think this is the difficulty with the film, is that it also knows it's crap. Do you see what I mean? So to stick the boot into it, they also kind of go, yeah, we know it's a bit rubbish. There was one scene, though, that was slightly problematic. Was there's a pub which the main character, played by Nick Moran, and there's an old boy. I don't know if he works there or if he has shit. He's always in there. And one of the barmaids walks in, much younger, and he just slaps her on the arse. And smiles at her, and she smiles back at him. And I was a bit like,
"Yeah, it's a kids' film." It's also got the line "Get it up, you" in it, and it's a kids' film.
Guys, we've got to talk about the CGI. The CGI. So my major disappointment with it was just, I understand that it's a kid's film and I understand it's not to be taken that seriously, but just a couple of points on that. One is the dog is hardly in it. The dog is hardly in it. So the very idea that they set up the whole movie with this opening scene about this super intelligent dog that escapes, who is then hardly in the film other than just occasionally paws at its own face and kicks around a really badly CGI'd football for a couple of scenes, is baffling.
The majority of the plot centers around this kid basically discovering his long lost dad, and the dad doesn't know he has a kid, and it's all about this American kid having to move to Scotland and figure all of that out. And the second plot is that very same dad, his ex-best friend, went on to play for the London Bangers, where he became the biggest football star in England, basically. And the C plot, the incidental C plot, is the bit about this dog created in a lab by a Nazi that's inexplicably good at football that is going to help them in the game where this guy plays against his ex-best friend. It's not only that the dog's not in the film that much because of budgetary reasons, it's not in the plot that much.
What I like about the fact that the CGI looks terrible on the ball when the dog is doing anything other than just kind of like nudging it with his nose, the CGI is awful. So they've clearly rendered the CGI ball, and that looks pretty crap. It looks like it's been done on an iPhone app. But then clearly very late in the day, Admiral have come in with some sponsorship money, and they've tried to CGI Admiral into every scene, which they manage with the shirts and an inexplicable logo they put in the goal net. But they also try and put it on the ball as well, and it looks unspeakably bad. It looks like
Yeah. It defies physics, doesn't it?
It does.
Can we talk about the team as well, of American men playing Scotsmen and who are wearing Braveheart wigs.
Then why is the goalkeeper wearing a kilt in goal? I don't get that. But also,
stereotyping.
I thought that after a shot at glory, we were done with terrible Scottish accents. And then this film, everyone has a terrible Scottish accent. Mm. Even Nick Moran, who's obviously English, can't do a decent Scottish accent, and I thought, we're not getting away from this at all, are we? I hate to say
there is no need for the film to be set in Scotland as well. That's what's fascinating about it to me. It would have saved them all a lot of trouble.
It really would have done.
But you know what it felt like to me? It felt like it's got absolutely no heart in it. It's got no heart at all in it at all. And it is a very, very sleepwalky type project. And Nick Moran should be utterly ashamed of himself, by the way, because he is now scraping the ground where the barrel used to be, being in that kind of stuff. But the fact that it's set in Scotland is a bit of a misnomer, because it's not really set in Scotland. It's set in some weird person who's never been to Scotland's idea of what Scotland actually is, which is so far wide of the mark, the whole thing just becomes utterly risible.
I didn't see anybody complaining about my Corby Jones impression back in the day, so it's 1-1, I would say.
The CGI is so bad, Pete, you alluded to it, but I will go further and chuck a load more. I'll chuck some praise your way, Donnie. The CGI in that movie is legitimately worse than some of the CGI effects you've put on some of our live videos for some of our live shows.
Cheers, mate. I like the fact that they all in the pub drink out of metal tankards, and they wear kilts all the time, and the goalkeeper's got very orange teeth. At one point, he does a blue and white face like Braveheart. And also the TV channel that covers this game for some inexplicable reason, that is attended by about 20 people, is called Cheerio London, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah. And also the idea of football itself is represented in the same way that Scotland is represented as a country, isn't it? Because this is literally a team of people playing in a park with about 20 people in attendance. And I think in the final still of the movie, doesn't it imply that next season Nick Moran's team win the European Cup?
No, so that was confusing to me as well. But what actually happened was he put his pub on as a bet, and if he had lost, he would have given the guy who used to be his mate the pub. But if he had won, he would have got the cup from him. So he wins, so he gets the cup.
It's a memorabilia.
But it's just essentially a terrible trophy with European Cup written on it. I don't understand how they think a team called the London Bangers are going to be a professional team in the first place, let alone winning a European Cup, who are then going to go up to some place in Scotland, like you say, which is just a park supported by 20 people, to play a football match in which a dog performs the defining role. Whole thing is like a mad acid fever dream.
Yeah,
It's like a joke. What it is, it's not a movie. It's a joke that went too far. That's what it is.
It's like students have made it. It's like they've deliberately made it stupid. So, Pete, I understand it, didn't you watch a bit of the first one? Is there any sort of correlation between them? Because it doesn't feel like a sequel.
Yeah, no, I'm not really sure how the two connect, but I accidentally started watching at least half an hour of Soccer Dog 1. The budget was astronomical compared to this piece of crap. But the one message I did get from it is that you can adopt kids really easy if they come from an orphanage over there. I know a lot of people will be listening to this podcast and they're going through an adoption process themselves. And obviously, you know, most councils, most jurisdictions, most prefectures will have their own rules on how to adopt. But you certainly don't just turn up to an orphanage and go, "Can I have a kid, please?" And the evil matron, owner of the orphanage, goes, "Fine, write your name here and you can have a child," like that. So it's basically that's how it worked there. But it was the messaging in the first one seemed to be that evil people have curtains, the haircut curtains, the dog catcher curtains, the evil kid had a curtain. This coach is evil as well, and also the man who sells the boy his soccer shoes, his cleats, does a big sermon about how choosing the right shoes is a bit like a casserole. That's about as far as I got, to be honest.
There was a really weird bit in European Cup, the second one, which I might have completely missed the point, but. So it's the second movie in a series and the dog is called Kimball, and it's made very clear that the dog is called Kimball. And then there's a poster for this football match that's organized in this movie. And it's got the name of the dog on the poster, Kimball. And then the next scene, the kid inexplicably just decides to name the dog Kimball.
Yeah, he makes it up on the spot, doesn't he?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Another kid asks him, "What's the name of the dog?" And he goes, and he looks at some dog food called Kimball, and he goes, "Kimball." It's almost like they filmed the first draft and did one thing for everything.
Yeah. Oh, well, we've got some IMDb reviews from people who've actually sat down and watched this before us. Makes the Air Bud movies look like Orson Welles.
We should clarify on that. The Air Bud, because when searching for Soccer Dog, other type films come up. An Air Bud is if it's not ridiculous enough that a dog can play football, in Air Bud, the dog's playing a quarterback in American football.
Yeah. Well, Air Bud actually, there's a soccer one as well. He's done loads of stuff. He's a multi-talented dog. I don't think he ever plays tennis, Air Bud.
Sorry, I stand down.
As a Scot, it makes me extremely angry as to how we were portrayed in this bargain bin rubbish. Why? The only good thing about this film is does that it ends. The 6 years between Lock, Stock and Soccer Dog were merely the blink of an eye. It truly is a wonderful piece of cinema and the dog is heart.
But that puts it into perspective, Pete. Like, I mean, you think about Nick Moran, who has made Lock, Stock, which is this breakthrough hit, and he's quite good in it, and it's a decent enough film, and it did really well. I mean, 6 years later, he's making this. Mm.
Didn't he get blacklisted for being a bit of an idiot at the premiere of Lock, Stock?
Yeah, there was definitely an incident. I think he punched a photographer, I think it was.
Mm. Ooh. I mean, that doesn't necessarily get you precluded from Hollywood films, Gladiator. a lot of actors have got handsy in the past, but in a punching sense.
Yeah, and actually, Michael Hutchence used to punch paparazzi and just pay the fines he'd end up getting, and he just would consistently say, "It's just worth it. It's worth the money," which is hilarious.
That is quite cathartic.
Yeah. It wasn't worth it for Nick Moran. I mean, nothing's worth being in Soccer Dog 2.
God, so he must have moved to Hollywood hoping he can get some work, and he's ended up in Soccer Dog 2, which must be some sort of tax write-off thing.
Everyone thinks they can act. Everyone thinks that Nick Moran's just taking a payday here and stuff, but he's in a film. None of us have ever been in a film. Acting is difficult. We all think we can act, but it's really, really difficult. Nick Moran He's got a payday. He's in a Hollywood film. We sat down for an hour and 20. We paid Amazon or whoever we rented it off a couple of quid for this. So who's the fools, Nick Moran or us? It's us.
Us for following you. There's nice to see Donna from Suits in it, though, who's gone on to have a proper career.
Yes.
Oh, right. I didn't know there was another proper person in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's that guy who turned up in Breaking Bad. You noted on IMDb, Jim.
Yes. Yeah, I was just went through IMDb to see if there were any other proper people in it. I missed her, evidently, but there was a guy who was in like two scenes in Breaking Bad.
Well, Nick Moran didn't learn his lesson because he's in Goal 3 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine Goal 3 is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the, I must admit, the soundtrack was right up my street. The Hippos, Aquabats are in there. Juliana Theory, who are a little bit more emo. Bit of Reliant K for Spelzy. Lovely old job. It just ticked. The music's ticked a lot of boxes for me.
Right, Peter. Which film are we going to be watching for next time?
I've given you a stinker. Let's now have... I was going to rhyme that. Let's now have something a little bit better with the Arsenal Stadium Mystery from 1939.
Ah.
Oh, Graham Greene, Martin Scorsese, big fans of this film. Highbury Stadium witnesses a murder and only intrepid Inspector Slade can solve the case. Only trouble being is he's got the Police Review to direct as well. It's a comic whodunit, people. It's one of the earliest feature films about football and it remains one of the best in many people's opinions.
Pete, is it a caper? Have you given us a caper?
I think it might be a caper, Jim.
Yes! Because I've just typed it into Google and it actually features appearances from the Arsenal manager at the time, George Alisson, and members of his team.
Brilliant. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
It's a cinematic rebuttal to those later charges of boring, boring Arsenal, one of the synopsis bits says.
That can only be a good thing.
I'm delighted with this.
Oh, there we are.
So that's your revision for this week. And it'll be more fun, well, I imagine, and probably about as long as Soccer Dog to European Cup. But I enjoyed European Cup, so you should have too.
With the Soccer Dog European Cup, just very quickly, finally on that, even though it was on about an hour and 20 minutes long, I couldn't get away from the idea. I couldn't fully relax because I thought I would rather be doing anything else than watching this right now.
Yeah.
And as I said to Marcus, it's the closest I've come to not following it all the way through to the end. So I'm hoping the Arsenal Stadium Mystery will be a salve to that horrendous dog-themed wound.
Spoken like a true cat fan.
I would like to say that because there were points of Soccer Dog 2 European Cup that was so bad I found them funny, for that reason alone, I enjoyed it more than A Shot at Glory.
Oh, Jim, piss off.
Come on.
No, I'm serious. I hated every second of that.
That's why I'm telling you to piss off. And we need to piss off, ladies and gentlemen. It's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Andy and Jules are back tomorrow for another great chat that they're going to have. And there will be no Soccer Dog 2 mentions there. So you're done with that. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete Donaldson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Nice one, listeners. We'll be with you again very, very soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.